Next up, we have Lieutenant Commander Robin Toblin, who is a he was a scientist officer in the United States Public Health Service, my service, and a clinical research psychologist with Walter Reed Army Institute of Research. She earned her Ph.D. in clinical psychology and her M.P.H. at the University of Southern California. Why can't I speak today?
USC.
USC. There we go. So, her postdoctoral fellowship was in Epidemic Intelligence Service at the CDC, and her main focus there was prescription drug abuse. All right.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I have no financial disclosures to report. All right, so I'm going to give a little bit of background right now just on the opioid pain reliever, which I'm going to call OPR epidemic. So as mentioned already, the amount of opioid pain relievers sold has increased 4 times over the last decade, largely due to an increase in prescribing practices. And that widespread availability has led to epidemic use. SAMHSA data has shown that recently 12 million Americans reported non-medical use or abuse of OPRs in the past year. And that has led to unintentional poisoning overdoses, which include drug overdoses, becoming the leading cause of U.S. injury deaths, overtaking motor vehicle injuries, which is just really fascinating because that's been the number one cause for so long. And that's largely driven by the opioid overdose epidemic. Recently, data has shown that annually there are 15,000 deaths due to opioid overdoses and almost 500,000 emergency department visits. Now, taking it down into the veteran population, we know that veterans are almost twice as likely to die from an unintentional poisoning as those in the general population, and that opioids were the most common cause of poisoning. And then there are other studies that look at the mental health associations with opioid and found that both that OPR misuse is associated with both substance abuse and mental health disorders in the veteran population. Taking it down a little further, looking at the active duty military, I work for the Army, so that's the populations I study, there's only been one study that we could find. It was a large survey of health behaviors in general of the military population. And they examined drug misuse, but it included other things like, as you can see at the bottom of the screen, including stimulants, methamphetamines, tranquilizers, et cetera. So it didn't partial out opioid use. But what that study did find is that in the last month, 11% of service members had misused prescription drugs, and that was 4 times the rate of just 3 years prior to that study. And that for those who had deployed, 16% had misused prescription drugs in the past year. So that brings us to our current rationale for why we're doing the study we are doing. So as I mentioned, as far as I know, there aren't any studies that report specifically opioid use in an active duty population. And we also know that use of opioids precipitates misuse, and there's an epidemic of adverse outcomes in both the general and the veteran populations. We also know that the military population is prone to risk factors often associated with opioid use, including pain and mental illness. And finally, we wanted to look at access as a possible reason why there might be differences in rates, if there are differences in rates between use while on a deployment and use following a deployment, which we would call garrison, would be coming back home. The goals of the study were to identify the prevalence of opioid use as well as chronic pain during and after a combat deployment and to see if there were any associations with pain and mental health, particularly post-traumatic stress disorder. So we have 2 data sets that are both part of a larger study of the impact of combat exposure and well-being on health. So the first study is from a deployed sample, people in theater, in Afghanistan from the summer of 2010. These were combat units, so it was all male by virtue of being a combat unit, and ultimately 1,000 participants consented to participate. The second study was post-deployment, 3 months post-deployment after coming home from Afghanistan, and these soldiers were surveyed in July of 2011, so just about a year ago, and ultimately the sample size was 2,554, all of whom had deployed. So the left-hand panel and a lot of the slides is going to be what went on in the deployed sample. The right-hand side will be the post-deployment sample. 2 different study questions here. The first one came from a Kansas BRFSS, their study. We used the same question as them, and then we refined it a little bit more in a later study. So the first study asked, if you've had chronic pain that occurs constantly or flares up, what types of medication are you taking for your pain? And then it listed out a series of them, and it included one of the options was opiate, and it's listed out tramadol, Percocet, codeine, and whatnot. So So for chronic pain, if they had responded positively to any of the options, they were considered positive for chronic pain. There was also an option, no medication use, but yes, I have chronic pain. That was still considered positive for that. For the post-deployment sample, we had two questions. One, how frequently are you experiencing it and for how long? So if they said more than half the days for longer than 3 months, they were considered to have chronic pain. We also looked at mental health symptoms. So if they reported any screening criteria for major depressive disorder, generalized anxiety disorder, or PTSD, they were considered to have a mental health problem, I guess you would call it, symptom. And then PTSD was specifically, you looked at using the PTSD checklist with a cutoff of 50 or greater. Our main outcome use was OPR use. So as I mentioned, the deployed sample, they were asked, how have you been taking pain medication for your pain? And one of the options was prescription, OPRs, or narcotic painkillers. The post-deployment sample, pretty similar, past month use of prescription, opiate or narcotic pain medication, and both listed out the same series of drugs, fairly comprehensive list of opiates. For our analysis, we used prevalence rates and multiple logistic regression using OPRs as the outcome, controlling for demographics. So first, just looking at the sample between the two data sets, you can see the people who deployed, the soldiers and Marines who deployed, were a little bit younger and therefore less likely to be married, more likely to be in the lower ranks of military. All right, so here's a look at some of those key predictor variables or independent variables. PTSD during combat was 15% and post-deployment 9%. You can see the mental health combined category was very similar, so for the rest of the talk I'll just be referring to PTSD because it seems that was driving the vast majority of the mental health issues. Looking at chronic pain, you can see it was about 35%, plus or minus 2. Between the two populations, 37% reported chronic pain during combat, 33% after combat. Okay, so this has three categories. The first one looks at OPR use during combat. You can see it's quite low, 1.3%. In the post-deployment sample, 15% reported using opioid prescription pain relievers. And then 28% reported it amongst those with chronic pain. So for soldiers and Marines with chronic pain, or just soldiers, for soldiers with chronic pain, 28% of them were reported using opioids. So we did just some basic associations. These are associations of chronic pain and PTSD with OPRs. For the deployed sample, we couldn't look at the association with chronic pain because it was actually tied into the same question. If you had chronic pain, did you use a medication? So we couldn't examine an association with the same item. But for the PTSD, we found in the deployed sample no association with PTSD and opioid use. However, in the post-deployment sample, we found strong associations with chronic pain and PTSD with opioid use. We then looked at a multiple logistic regression, including both PTSD as well as chronic pain and a host of demographic variables. So first, just looking at the demographic variables, we didn't find any associations with demographic variables in the deployed sample, but in the post-deployment sample, we found older age, lower rank, which could be seen as a proxy for education. We didn't have education in that, but it could be seen as a proxy for that. Being married, and female gender as associations with OPR use. Okay, and then looking at the multiple regression, looking at chronic pain and PTSD, again, we saw that PTSD wasn't associated with the deployed sample, that chronic pain was strongly associated with the post-deployment sample, but interestingly, once we factored in chronic pain and the demographics, the PTSD association that you saw in the crude odds ratio was attenuated here. It was very, very close. My P was 0.053, but it wasn't associated. So that's why I have my 0.996 there. One is still included in that. All right, so let's discuss the prevalence of key variables. So first of all, chronic pain is really high in both of these samples, about 35%. And keeping in mind, this is a young population. We're talking about mostly people in their 20s, 18 to 35 being the vast majority of this population. And Kansas, like I mentioned, had a question on their behavioral health surveys. And looking at the Kansas population of 18 to 35-year-old men with insurance, that were employed, so they'd be similar to an Army population, their rate of chronic pain was 15%. These differences are probably due to the battle injuries that soldiers are experiencing. We know that 15 to 25% have combat injuries. We also saw that OPR use was low in the combat setting, and most of the use was in the post-deployment sample. All right, on the left-hand side, we saw there were no associations with demographics or PTSD with opioid use, and that's probably likely due to the fact that there were mission responsibilities that if you were, shall I say, loopy from your opioids, it might be hard to be doing what you need to do for the mission for your combat operations. So in the post-deployment, it's very possible that now they're able to go to the doctor and get prescriptions for the pain that they're experiencing, keeping in mind this was just 3 months, surveyed just 3 months after they came home, and the question asked about past 30-day use, so that could have even been 2 months after they came home. We also saw associations with increased age, lower rank, and being married, which is consistent with the general population and veterans. What was very interesting is that there was not an association with PTSD, which was not consistent with the general population, where you really do see strong associations normally between opioid use and mental health. One possible consideration, again, is that this is just after they came home, and so the pain really may be driving the vast majority of the use in this population 3 months out as opposed to later on down the road. Okay, so as I mentioned, pain from the combat injuries probably warranted opioids. We saw that one-third were reporting chronic pain, and then we did some preliminary data analysis. We showed a dose-response trend for pain severity and opioid use. Again, I mentioned already the PTSD may not be associated because we're looking at it so soon afterwards. Okay, looking at possibility that there's a prescription drug abuse panel or misuse panel, so what are the implications here for possible misuse down the line? As I mentioned earlier, we know that 11% of service members reported past month misuse of prescription drugs. So we know that this is an issue going on in the wider military population. And also that prescriptions for pain can later on turn into abuse and dependence. OPRs can wind up becoming used as self-medication or for recreation. We also saw similar associations in the general population, suggesting that this population may be at risk for using based on their age, gender, or their marital status. We also, this is preliminary data. I know you're not supposed to report new data in your discussion, so I apologize up front for that. It's preliminary data. It's my way of getting around it. So we also saw that 5% of opioid users reported no pain in the past month. So there are some people using these medications that aren't currently experiencing pain. We also saw amongst people using opioids that 39% of them reported mild pain, and of those using it more than half the days, 28% of people had mild pain, and opioids are really supposed to be used for moderate to severe pain, not for mild pain. Of course, this is, as I will tell you in my limitations, a cross-sectional study, so it's possible that the reason that they have mild pain now is because their pills are working. That's possible. So we don't know the reason why those levels are there. But so overall, limitations. First, you saw that there was a different STEM question about chronic pain between the two samples, so comparisons are a little bit more difficult because of that. The samples also had different demographics, a younger population that was deployed, therefore less married, lower rank, and all male. Other possibility, and someone already mentioned this, participants could misidentify or underreport use of prescription drugs. They may not know what they're taking. Though we had an other category, and we only found two people that reported an other that was a prescription, that was an opioid pain reliever. So generally having that long list of opioids seemed to have people accurately report that they were using opioids. It's a cross-sectional design, as I mentioned, so we really don't have any causation that we can report here. And finally, it's self-reported data, so we don't have their actual prescriptions. We don't have a PTSD diagnosis, and we don't have actual injuries to report. So the conclusions I'm going to go through briefly because I think I've said them a lot already, but the OPR use was uncommon during deployment, probably because of combat mission needs. In the post-deployment, it was used by quite a few soldiers, 15%. It was associated with pain and not PTSD, and so it seems at this time point that a lot of that is probably related to pain. So next steps, the good news is, though I said this was cross-sectional, we have a second wave of data now, so that's exciting. Thanks. So we have the study that'll come out in a paper hopefully will be reporting that longitudinal data, and that time point is 16 months post deployment. So a lot of that initial pain that might be coming from combat injuries hopefully has receded somewhat. So we'll be able to also we have data on did you have a combat injury again? It'll be self-reported, but we have that as a possibility to explore, as well as combat exposure, frequency of opioid use, pain severity, and mental health. So that'll be an exciting study, so look for that in, 2 years or so, as we all know from the publication process. Also, it'd be helpful if surveys like this that we were doing had OPR misuse as opposed to use. That would be very useful, so we can hopefully we can incorporate those kind of items in the future. And then the reason that would be useful is the broader studies have so little ability to drill down because they're asking about so many different health behaviors. We'd have a little bit more nuanced research if we could ask about misuse in our surveys. And finally, as a DOD-wide, it would be great if surveillance of opioids were done more looking at A, surveys, but also review of medical records and TRICARE pharmacy. Thank you very much. Questions?
Do you ask any questions about non-fatal overdose?
We don't have anything about it, if they've overdosed or not. One of the considerations when you're asking these surveys is there's often concerns about getting in trouble with command or how will they look, even though it's anonymous, and even though we do a good job anonymizing it, we often don't put questions such as that on there. And the other thing being, if they had overdosed, very possible, and I can't say this in all cases, that they would have been medically boarded out of military and might not be in anymore. So that you might not see those in just a day-to-day active duty population. Okay, any others? It was not formally diagnosed. It's a good question. So on the survey, we were able to use the items from the post-traumatic checklist, PCL, and we were able to use the criteria from the DSM and a cutoff of a score of 50 to say that they met screening criteria, but not a formal diagnosis.
Did you ask about smoking and drinking?
So we have data on... We have data in that particular survey on alcohol. Interestingly, we don't in that particular survey of tobacco. We have it in previous surveys, but unfortunately none of the surveys have tobacco on there at the same time. But we do have alcohol, and that'll be an important factor to look at in our upcoming study. So I will make sure I incorporate that. Absolutely, and that's a very good point. Yeah, a lot of times you may see them either correlated or even masking the mental health, and so that may be accounting for part of it here.
When you mentioned that the soldiers report an overdose, they get in trouble, isn't this confidential?
It is. So it would be, yeah, that would just be a concern of your own reporting, like what if somebody could figure it out. But you know, it is absolutely confidential and pretty complicated system of making it confidential. So you'd hope that they would be honest. But there's just sort of these, when you go with surveys higher up, people get concerned about these riskier questions on the surveys.
That is one of the primary risks to facing soldiers. And I know the military has been more progressive than Fort Bragg. They have overdose prevention programs going on.
Yeah.
There. So I think that could be something.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other problem is, and this is that in my group they call it retail space on the surveys. We have these large surveys and you have to worry about the soldiers at the end just circling whatever they want because they want to get done with it. And so there's often a negotiation process in my branch of how many questions you get on each topic because we're asking about a lot of different mental health factors. So to do some longer screen on that or on any topic, you know, you have to bargain for it. So, but I think down the line, I think it's worthwhile because I think the use and the misuse, of course, they're going to be tied, but I think there's going to be some separations that we really want to look at as well. Yes?
I'm just wondering what other information you are able to collect or know about
combat experience. So we have, on this survey, we have 34 combat experiences, and they answer it, five or more times that they've experienced it. Typically, we'll dichotomize it, have you experienced it or not, but it's also possible to look at number of times they've experienced it. And so with the 34 exposures, I mean, it's everything from being blown up to witnessing the death of somebody you know to witnessing to killing somebody. So we do have that information. That'll be really important to factor out here.
I think that is important. or other health factors.
Yeah.
It would be great if you were able to characterize.
That will be in the study for sure, absolutely. Thank you very much.